This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to talk a little boxing at the beginning of the show. We're going to talk with Steve Farhood from Showtime Sports. A lot going on in the boxing world right now, so it's a good time to bring up the topic and discuss some of the things going on. Steve, so how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Hey, doing a lot better and doing good. And, I know you mentioned well, everyone probably saw that. I haven't seen the fight yet, last week's Cotto Mayweather fight. It did sound like Mayweather let Cotto hit him more or he wanted to provide a more action-packed fight. Do you think he's still got the goods as far as the best defensive fighter in the world, or is he slipping a little bit?
Well, he's so good defensively that he doesn't need to move as much as he used to. I mean, he was stationary, and he gave Cotto a target for pretty much all 12 rounds, and yet Cotto did not hit him a lot. He hit him some, maybe a little more than we're used to Mayweather getting hit, but I think now that Mayweather's 35 years old, he's going to have to rely on his stationary upper body movement much more than his legs, because the legs are not going to respond as much as they used to. So it's a little bit different, Floyd. Maybe a little bit slightly more vulnerable, but he's still so good defensively that he's so, so hard to hit.
Yes, as long as he's hard to hit, that makes him a very, very tough target. And I was surprised that fight really, I just found that basically $70 is probably too much, at least for me to spend. I know a lot of people, I think, have that same sentiment. That's a lot of money unless you want to get your friends together and like that. But it's amazing how much the cost of pay-per-view fights has gone up.
Well, it's a lot. It's been that way for a long time in boxing. It's asking a lot. But I think people who get together, fight fans who get together and pay the 50 or the 60 bucks, a lot of them chip in and they make a big night out of it. And that's kind of fun, to watch your friends. And, hey, Mayweather delivered this time. I mean, he hasn't always been the most exciting guy. And sometimes fans feel maybe cheated to pay the big pay-per-view dollars. But in this case, nobody complained. It was a pretty action-packed fight.
Wow, so Cotto, at least it looked like he had a chance to win it, even though the scorecards didn't indicate that it was even close.
Yeah, well, he was competitive. And, in so many of Mayweather's fights, his opponents have no chance whatsoever. So I think this was refreshing to have a fight where Mayweather had to work hard and Cotto kept coming. And I never had the impression that Cotto was going to win, but he was in the fight. He won two or three rounds. He had some middle rounds that were impressive. And then Mayweather sort of regained control. So Mayweather deserved the win. It was reasonably close, but not all that close. And Mayweather showed why he's the top guy in boxing.
I know a lot of people ask him about the Pacquiao fight after the fight. Do you think we're ever going to see a Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, or are we just blowing smoke on that?
Well, the longer it goes without it, the more likely it's not going to happen. It's a miracle that it hasn't happened because of the money that it could generate.
Yes.
But I tell you, Pacquiao fights now on June 9th, and he has a tough fight with Tim Bradley. Who knows what could happen there? Mayweather, we know, is going to jail for 90 days. So a lot of things can happen to ruin the fight. It's still out there. It still could happen. I still hope it happens. It would be great for boxing if it happens. But I don't know how much each guy wants to fight at this point, and that's a shame. Because, you want the best to fight the best, and these are the best two guys in the game.
Yes, that's for sure. Well, I was pleased to read that we might have two of the better fighters of the world today fighting soon, Andre Ward and we'll be fighting Chad Dawson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be a very good fight if that comes to pass.
Well, it's a very interesting fight. Andre Ward is clearly the best 168-pounder in the world. And, he won the Super 6 tournament on Showtime. And Dawson is coming off the win over Hopkins, where he clearly won. So it's a good matchup. And I think that the winner would be certainly top five pound for pound.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. Yeah, that could be a great week. Like I said, we don't get too many chances where we see two of the best fighters you know, in the ring against each other, especially in their prime. Most of the time it's after their prime is over, or sometime some fighters get together on their way up, but very rarely do we see two fighters in their prime. And I certainly hope it comes off, because that could be a very, very good fight.
Two very fast guys, and you know what? You said the word prime. They're both in their primes. There's no doubt about that. And they're both coming off big wins, so the confidence level is very high. But if you want to be great, you got to fight great fighters, and you got to take chances. And these two guys are willing to do that, so I give them credit.
Yeah. And how about the other fight? This one was canceled, the Amir Khan and Peterson fight. We were surprised to hear about, of course, him with the whole steroid thing. What do you make out of the whole steroid accusations putting on Peterson?
Well, it's very unfortunate. There seems to be some kind of question. If you want to listen to Peterson's side of the story, there seemed to be some issues about whether he was taking, these pellets because he has a naturally low testosterone in his body. If that's the case, he should have told people, should have told the commission that's why he was doing it. I don't think he ever did that. So, you know, he tested positive. How else is the commission supposed to respond? It's a very unfortunate thing, because their first fight was very good, and we were all looking forward to the rematch, and now it's not going to happen. Very unfortunate, but you know, you have to crack down on steroid use, on any kind of performance enhancing use in boxing. It's a very dangerous thing. This is boxing. Mm. Fighters get hurt badly. You can't have cheaters. You just can't.
Do you think it'll come to pass where we'll have the Olympic-type testing in boxing on a consistent basis? We know Mayweather's been calling for it for a long time. Do you think we'll ever see that, or will they just stay with the urine samples?
Well, I think that it would be great, but it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and this is an issue. If you test every fighter, there has to be some kind of revenue stream to pay for it. Now, what happened with Peterson and Khan, they voluntarily agreed to this new VADA testing, V-A-D-A, which is a Nevada thing run by Margaret Goodman. They voluntarily tested, and he tested positive, so it's kind of ironic that Peterson was the one that wanted testing. In the best of all worlds, I'd like to see fighters agree to test voluntarily, and then that'll set a tone. Hopefully, most fighters will follow.
Yes, it would. It certainly would. Did you get a chance to see Seth Mitchell in his last fight?
Sure did. Oh yeah, that was exciting. A little too exciting if you're Seth Mitchell, but you know, he showed the good news is he showed the ability to take some pounding and come back and score a win. Really, only a couple of rounds after he got hurt. The bad news is that he got hurt in the first place against a guy who's really not a puncher. So it all depends on how you want to look at it. But certainly what happened with Seth is going to make people want to watch him next time out.
Oh, that's for sure. There's talk about he might fight. He might meet Michael Grant in the next outing.
Yes, could be as soon as June 30th. That's the rumor. And, Michael Grant is a legitimate test. Michael Grant fought very well his last fight out. He's obviously a huge guy, 6'7". Past his prime for sure, but this is the kind of level of competition that Seth Mitchell is going to fight. And sometimes when you're rising, it's important to take a half step back before you take two steps forward. And that might be what the Grant fight is for Seth Mitchell at this point.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things going on in the boxing world today, isn't there? I know you've got a couple of good fights coming up tomorrow night, don't you?
Tonight, Showtime. On Showbox, the Showbox series, we have Udell Johnson, who's an undefeated junior middleweight from Cuba. He was a top amateur, and he's fighting Willie Nelson, who's a 6'3" junior middleweight. That's our main event. And then in the first fight, we have two undefeated super middleweights, a guy from Colombia, Alex Brand, and he's fighting Badu Jack, who's from Sweden, of all places, who's also an Olympian. So two good fights, four fighters, only one loss between the four of them. It's 11 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Showtime, so the viewers should check it out.
Yeah, that should be very entertaining. You know, Steve, we don't get a ton of 200-defeated fighters fighting these days. Every now and then you do. Can you tell at all if this might be a mismatch, or are they both really legitimate fighters?
Well, in the first fight we have the super middleweights. Alexander Brand has a good amateur background, but he's from Colombia, and a lot of his wins came against Colombians. And we've learned in boxing that those wins don't necessarily mean a lot. So he's got a lot to prove here. Badu Jack, he's taken a step forward, too. He's only 10-0. So it's unusual for two guys, regardless of who they've beaten, it's unusual for two undefeated fighters to fight each other this early in their careers. Usually they're still padding their records at this point. So I give them credit for being willing to fight each other.
Yeah. When I look at that, and when I see these two fighters are unbeaten, when you lose, you know, a lot of times, it would take 2 or 3 years basically to get back on track. I mean, you know, if you lose this one fight now, and it's funny how as long as you stay unbeaten, you're on a fast track. But as soon as you lose one, your track is a lot slower, isn't it?
It sure is, and some of that is TV's fault, you know?
Yes.
TV puts too much of an emphasis on undefeated fighters. We know, you and I know, that 30, 40, 50 years ago, if a fighter had 6 losses, so what? He was still a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how you lose, not just if you lose, but how you lose. And tonight, in our main event, we have this fighter, Willie Nelson. He lost on Showbox 2 fights ago, and we're bringing him back because he fought well, and he got beat. But that doesn't mean that he's not a good fighter and he can't perform well.
Yes. Are we ever going to get to the point where, you know, people will start appreciating just having 2 good fighters matched up? Or does the win-loss still carry too much weight?
No, I think I hope that the attitude is changing, and it's up to the TV networks to be willing to put on guys who have lost, who may not have perfect records. That's the most important thing. Because you can't learn, you know, a lot of fighters learn a lot more from a loss than you do from 5 wins against nobody. And boxing always used to be that way. And I blame the TV executives largely for the fact that it's not still that way. But I know on our show, on Showbox, we bring a lot of fighters back who have lost and give them a second chance, and some of them have done very well.
I know when I talked to Seth Mitchell the other week, he told me he learned so much from that fight, from he had never been hit like that before, by Witherspoon in the first round. And so he said he learned a lot from that, and he said he knew the mistakes that he made defensively, and his trainer and him will work on correcting those mistakes that he made. He said basically he just wasn't bending. He wasn't bending in the waist too much. He should have done. Probably fought more straight up, he says, because he just, you know, as you know, in that fight, he just came over the top and hit him because of the way of his stance, he says. So he said it's a mistake that can be easily corrected. But he says he was
right.
Really, that mistake that really hurt him when he got hit. But he says he learned a lot from that. It's good, probably, isn't it, for most fighters to be tested, because you need to get the hit sometimes to know how you can react when you're hurt. And that's one thing that he learned. Now he knows how to react when he gets hurt.
Right, and that's something you can't practice in the gym.
Right.
You know, he learned 2 things. He learned, A, the mistakes he made getting hit in the first place, and he has to work on correcting those. And then he learned that he can come back if he's hurt. And that's something a lot of prospects don't learn until it's too late. So good for him that he came back, and now he has that confidence that no matter what happens in a fight, he can come back. You know, you don't want to have to go through that, but if he does go through it, he has the confidence to know that he can still win.
Yep. Hey, Steve. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you again, I'll be looking forward. Hopefully, I'm at the point now. I think we'll probably never see the Pacquiao, Mayweather fight, but I'll just still hold out that slender of hopes, because at first I used to think that. A long time ago that Pacquiao would fight and he would probably win, but now I don't think he could. But he could. It would be an entertaining fight if it ever happens. But I don't. I'm from the point now that the way Mayweather's so, he just doesn't like Arum, and since Arum is Pacquiao's guy, it's hard to believe that they can get over that in his animosity with Bob Arum.
Yeah, I agree with you. But it would still, even at this point, at this late date in time, it would still be a very positive thing if they fought each other. So I would pick Mayweather. I always have, but I still think it would be a good thing for boxing, and I hope it does happen.
Yeah, I'm like you. I hope it happens too. Hey, thanks a lot, Steve. It's always a good pleasure talking with you. I'll look forward to watching the fights tonight on Showtime, and hopefully our other people will watch it as well.
Thanks so much. I'll talk to you again. I appreciate it.
Talk to you later, Steve. Yep, bye-bye. Bye-bye. And that's Steve Farhood from Showtime Sports, and we're talking a little bit of boxing. The time now 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Should politicians have a basic understanding of science? I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, we ask for your suggestions about what science questions to ask the candidates. Plus, bias at the ballot box. Can candidates' race unknowingly influence your vote? That's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up on Talk of the Nation at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for tuning in today. This is Scott Pohl. Our high today, 73 degrees with sunny skies. A chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight. Look for a low in the low 50s. Mostly cloudy Saturday, maybe rain and thunderstorms. The high tomorrow, 70. Sunday, mostly sunny. The high, 71.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, let's talk some baseball. As many of you know, the Detroit Tigers right now are one game over 500. They're 16 and 15. So let's bring in our good friend Gary Gillette and talk some Tiger baseball. Gary, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Earl. How are things in East Lansing?
Hey, pretty good. And everyone around here, just about everywhere, it looks like in the state, is starting to be a little bit nervous about the Tigers. What do you see? Is it just a matter that the guys aren't hitting, or the pitching isn't matching? So what's going on with the Tigers right now?
Well, I would say two things. What's going on with the Tigers is, A, they're not the 61 Yankees like everyone was building them up to be before the season started. And two is that, you know, they're struggling a little bit. I still don't see how they could fail to win the division. This team is too deep. The Tigers have too many resources to not prevail. So I'm not worried about it, but it does confirm my opinion starting the season that this was not the super team that people were talking about.
Yes, I mean, to me, it was always a matter of the pitching. I thought they had three good pitchers in the beginning, and everyone was saying, well, hey, the other two guys aren't bad, and they should be okay. But I'm not sure if they've got much beside Verlander and Pfister and maybe even and Porcello.
Right. Well, of course, the problem is that except for Verlander, who has shown this kind of brilliance in the past, you know, it's hard for Jose Valverde to keep up being perfect. Joaquin Benoit had one previous season at the level he pitched at last year. And, of course, he did have a very rocky start last year. Phil Koch, he looks good, but, you know, he's not exactly consistent. Scherzer's very inconsistent. Even in the second half last year when people were talking about him finally finding himself, he still allowed more hits and innings pitched. Porcello, I think the Tigers brought him to the majors too soon. He just does not know how to pitch. Now, maybe he's learned, and maybe he's good. You know, he's been better in his last few starts, so maybe he's learned that. Pfister, God, he looked great last year, but, I mean, we're talking about half a season of brilliance, and, of course, we've already seen some injuries. So if everybody pitches or plays as well as they did last year, the Tigers going to be great. But not everybody does in a given year. Guys have slumps. Guys get injured. Guys aren't as good as you think.
Yes, I mean, that's the thing with the hitting. I mean, that's the mystery because it looks like Fielder and Cabrera aren't doing too badly, but, boy, it just seems like the rest of the team isn't carrying their weight.
Well, the Tigers have a lot of guys who I think are half good and gets like Ryan Rayburn. Do I like Rayburn? As a utility player, yeah. As a guy, you know, to come off the bench, a guy to pinch hit who might hit a home run and put you back in the game, yep. So I like him as a regular now. He's not a good fielder at second, not a good fielder in left. You know, this is a guy who cries out to be on the bench, ready to play when coach wants him, not a guy who should be in the lineup every day. Danny Wirth, the Tigers think Danny Wirth is, you know, a different player than he showed a year ago. I haven't seen it so far. You know, Johnny Peralta, I don't think Peralta's going to repeat the year he had last year, although certainly Peralta isn't the problem. Austin Jackson, he looks good. You know, I don't think he's going to have an MVP caliber year, but he looks like he's solidified. Brendan Bosch, you know, I couldn't believe the last 2 years the way Bosch was hitting left-handers. It just almost defies expectation that a left-handed power hitter would hit lefties that well, and so far he struggled. The Tigers, you know, the Tigers are a good team. I could see the Indians or the White Sox beating them, but things would basically have to collapse in Detroit for that to happen. So, I mean, I think the real question is what does the first 30 games of the season tell us about how good the Tigers are going to be in October? You know, last year with the Tigers finishing with that hellaciously good stretch that they did, where they just demolished the Central Division and pretty much everybody else late in the year, People were thinking the Tigers were the most the most dangerous team going into the postseason. Well, the most dangerous team lasted two series, and they lost the second one, of course. Now, they lost to the Rangers, which is no crime. The Rangers are an awfully good team, as we saw when they were in Detroit. But it remains to be seen. I think that rather than sitting pat, I think Dombrowski's going to be doing some tinkering in July this year. I don't know how much longer they can continue to play Rayburn, given how badly he's played. They already made the move they needed to do with Inge. It took them longer than it should have, but they finally did it. Cabrera, the experiment has worked out very well at third base this year. You know, and they realized their mistake last year in not giving Avila a good backup. They got Gerald Laird. The question will be, let's say the Tigers aren't doing so well in the second half, and they're worried about Cleveland or Chicago catching them. Are they going to be willing to rest Avila? I hope so, because last year they didn't rest him at all, and you know, we saw in the postseason how they paid for that.
Yes. Now, do we think that the Tigers it seems like they have too many, like you were just mentioning, too many defensive players that aren't very good defensive players. Are they going to have to do something, or maybe, I don't know, bring up some other players that can play a better defense? Because that does seem to be a problem.
Well, you know, the Tigers have some options. They cannot play Rayburn, so his defense doesn't hurt them in left or second. They could play Danny Wirth and see if Danny Wirth could really hit major league pitching. In spring training, they were saying that he could. I don't see the evidence of it yet. They're not going to do much with first and third. Cabrera is adequate at third. He's not going to be a really good third baseman. Fielder is minus at first, but you're just going to live with that for your bats. Shortstop, Peralta is acceptable. He's not great. Jackson is a great center fielder. The corner outfield spots, I mean, the thing that I think they really, aside from benching Rayburn, the other thing they need to do is bench or DH Delmon Young. Young is just an atrocious left fielder, just awful.
Yes, and that's one that, yeah, that you know, and you know, he still has to, you know, the issue that he's going to be facing, of course, when it finally comes up, the court issue with his anti-Semitic remarks. And how do you think that's affected the team, or at least how do you think it's affected Young at this point?
You know, Young seems contrite, somewhat to my surprise. The Twins didn't give Delmon Young up for essentially nothing, for no reason.
Right.
You know, Young came over to Detroit last year and hit very well, and then hit extremely well in the postseason. I think fans forgot that the Twins aren't stupid. They didn't give him up for nothing because they thought he had a future.
Right.
You know, Young has done the right thing since his arrest, and he's, I think, probably learned from the experience, and we're not going to see that kind of stupidity out of him again, either in getting drunk in public or those kinds of insanely stupid remarks. The Tigers have contained it very well. The Tigers actually are very good at this kind of thing. They button down the hatches, they don't comment, they don't leak, and then if the guy can play, they keep playing. If not, they deal him or just let him go. They have done this, you know, I did this with Miguel Cabrera, they did this with Dimitri Young, they did this with Gerald Laird when he had an alcohol-related incident a few years ago. I mean, they know the drill, and I think if Young wants to get help and is sincere about repenting, he will probably be fine in terms of his off-the-field stuff. I don't know what's going to happen in New York. I don't have the slightest clue whether he's going to go to trial and be convicted, go to trial and be acquitted, cop a plea, be sentenced to probation. I really don't know. All I know is he's hitting .236 with an OPS of .618. At that rate, he's not going to play forever, especially with his defense.
Has it been turning out like when we talked early in the season, you thought you could foresee the Tigers just grounding into a lot of double plays? Has that turned out, or you know, do they run the bases adequately, or did that turn out that way where they're just hitting into a horrendous amount of double plays?
Well, actually, that's a good question, Earl. I mean, when I'm watching them from the press box, it seems like, you know, every ground ball, it's like an easy double play. It's not even like a half step or a step. It's like, it seems like it's 10 steps. Of course, it's not. But, of course, when an infielder knows he has a lot of time because you have a slow runner, the infielders don't hurry their throws. So things can look closer than they really are. So the Tigers are, let's see here, in terms of GDP, the Tigers are fourth in the league with 28, and they're tied for fourth with two other teams. So that's not so bad. I mean, on the other hand, the Tigers haven't been putting a lot of runners on base either, right?
Yeah.
The Tigers are not hitting as well as they should, and meaning they're not hitting as well as they should, they're not putting as many runners on base. But, you know, you can live with the GDPs if Cabrera and Fielder and Peralta and Avila and Bosch are blasting the ball out of the park. You can live with that. That's just one of the prices you pay for big sluggers is that you tend to ground a lot of DPs. They hit the ball hard. They generally don't run so well. And if you have a good lineup in front of them, there are a lot of guys on base.
Yes, and unfortunately, they don't get a ton of runners on base for the most part, because it just seems like the other guys, they're just not doing their. I was thinking that you might have five or six guys that would be close to batting 300, and then with Cabrera and of course Fielder leading the way, but it just doesn't seem like they're not hitting consistently right now, are they?
I was talking about having good players before. One of the things you have is Andy Dierks. Now, nobody expected Dierks to do this well, and I don't think he can continue this kind of thing. I mean, Dierks was not considered a top prospect. So Dierks is hitting .383 in 60 at-bats, well above his head. I mean, if he continues to play, then he will solve the defensive problem in the outfield because he will play every day in lieu of Young or Rayburn. But I don't know. I mean, I think that there's no way to expect. I don't think Dierks is this good. I mean, he's 26 years old, or will be 26 this year, which is old for a guy to be breaking into the starting lineup, and he wasn't considered a top grade prospect. So, I really think I'm not worried about the Tigers winning the division. I'm really not. I'm just, questioning how good they're going to look when they stack up against the Rays, the Rangers, the Yankees, teams like that in the postseason.
You know, Gary, there's one thing that that we can count on in baseball, and that's that every pitcher and every hitter, they're always making adjustments. I mean, the hitters are constantly making adjustments to how they're being pitched, and pitchers are making adjustments to how hitters hit the ball. And I don't know if the Tigers are really good at making adjustments at this point. It just seems like they're whatever adjustments they're making, they're not working for them.
Well, that's true. I mean, I don't think it's their coach's fault. I think Lloyd McClendon is probably a pretty good hitting coach, and I think Jeff Jones is probably pretty good at what he does as a pitching coach. Of course, ultimately, the management, when they want to make a change and they don't want to fire the manager and don't want to trade their players, ultimately the hitting coach or the pitching coach pays the price. I think that some players are resistant to making adjustments. Brandon Inge, I sound like I'm going to pick on him. Brandon Inge is one of them. Brandon Inge was a guy who, when he was doing well and the pitchers figured him out, the pitchers made adjustments and Inge refused to. I see now, of course, he's hit two home runs and two grand slams in 3 days in Oakland. And, of course, the Tiger writers were interviewing him, and he's talking about how the difference in hitting is playing every day or not playing every day. Well, that's crazy. I mean, every guy who sits on the bench says, and who's not doing well, says, if I played every day, I could do better.
Yeah.
You know, Brandon had plenty of chances with Detroit in the last 2 years to show he could still hit, and he hasn't shown it. It's not like this year that he's been – it's not like because he was playing part-time this year, he didn't get a chance to hit. He got plenty of chance to hit last year and didn't. So I don't think the Tigers overall, the team, are a team where the hitters make a lot of adjustments, because I think the Tigers like to have guys who are aggressive, and aggressive often translates to see the ball, hit the ball kind of hitting. Mm-hmm. And some guys are really good at that and some guys aren't. I will say that Fielder and Cabrera are really smart hitters. I think because they're so skilled, people think there's not a lot of thought behind it. Both those guys are really smart hitters. Avila, I think, for a young guy, is remarkably composed, both behind the plate and in the batter's box. Peralta, I'm not so sure. That is, I don't know what the issues are with Peralta when he goes into a slump. Austin Jackson, it seems to me like he was resistant to making changes. The Tigers said that in the offseason they work with him, and he seems to be very successful now. Bosch, I can't tell you what his problem is other than I never could see him killing lefties the way he did. Bosch is a guy I think the Tigers really need, because if he struggles all year, then you've got to figure out who you're going to play. Now, you can play Dierks at this rate in lieu of Bosch, but then you're playing either Rayburn or Young, unless they bring somebody else up or make a trade.
Well, Gary, I mean, it's one thing we sort of been dancing around the subject, but you probably heard it down in Detroit. I know I hear a lot of it here out of state. A lot of people are very dissatisfied with Jim Leland. Is Leland a good manager or what at these days?
Oh, boy.
I knew that would,
I didn't know you were getting so many complaints out in Lansing, Earl. You know, Leland, I think, is sort of polarizing. I think that the old school fans like him a lot. I think the younger fans don't. I think the people who call into sports talk radio in Detroit don't like him very much. Now, I'm not coming on KAR because I can't get your signal at home. I know I could listen on the Internet, but I don't listen to radio on the Internet very much. Normally, I'm listening to WDET or WUOM. And I have my car program for WKAR, both AM and FM, but it's only when I'm out cruising around that I can get it, because on the east side of Detroit, your signal doesn't get over here. So I don't know who's calling in, but I know in Detroit, the people who call in would scalp Leland in a second. And I think the talk show hosts egg them on.
Yep.
I'm sure that you don't do that.
No, I don't. I hear it on a lot of other shows, though.
Right. No, I agree. I don't. I've never heard, in the 25 years or more that, I've been doing your show. And, of course, when I lived in Lansing, I listened to your show all the time, you and with Jim.
Yeah.
And I never heard you egg people on the way that people here do. It's really sort of raw meat radio. If you ask me, Leland is a National League manager who doesn't really translate well to the American League. He still likes to bunt and hit and run. And the Tigers are a power-based team and a power-based league. And I don't think that strategy plays well. I've seen him numerous times in the last few years bunt when he should be letting guys swing away, in my opinion. Of course, the Tigers are not asking my opinion, so I don't go and elbow somebody and say, hey, give this message to Jim. I think that Leland and the Tigers would like to play a National League game based on pitching and defense and a little bit of speed and reduce the importance of home run hitting, but that's just not possible for the Tigers. To be fair, Sparky Anderson wanted to do that. You remember back in the 90s when the Tigers were sort of half good, they would beat the brains out of a team 13-3 one day, and the next day they would lose 10-3.
Yeah.
And Sparky said many times one of the Tigers' problems was they scored too many runs on home runs and couldn't manufacture runs. Well, manufacturing runs is overrated. Manufacturing runs is really cool when you win a game 2-1 because a guy got an infield single, went to second on a stolen base, went to third on a fly ball to right field, and then scored on a squeeze play. That's really overrated because the game already has to be tight in the first place. If you've got a really good hitting team and a good pitching team, the games aren't tight by and large. So I think Jim tries to manage too much for pitching and defense in a league that's based on basically three-run home runs. Of course, now that scoring is way down, and scoring is down now, it's at a 20-year low. Now that scoring is way down, this works a lot better. we've seen drops in scoring in the last 4 years in a row. And scoring last year was down to about as low as it was in the early 90s, and now it's below that so far this year. So that style of managing works a lot better now than it did 4 years ago.
And that's, I tell you, things change in this game. They change a lot, even though the changes are really subtle. We can't tell the difference on a lot of the changes. But we know the Tigers, they've got to start hitting better. The pitching's got to get better, the relief pitching and the starting pitching. I mean, at the beginning of the year, I think we couldn't even see that. We thought this pitching staff was pretty solid, would be a pretty good part of the team, and they've got troubles almost in every aspect.
Yeah, I was not so confident about the pitching. I figured between Pfister, Scherzer, and Porcello, the Tigers would be doing okay if they got one really good year and one mediocre year. And I certainly wasn't thinking that two of the three would have really good years. And in the number five slot, on the other hand, I thought they would improve because last year we had to watch Brad Penny. And, God, that was brutal in the number five slot. Now, Smiley has been a real revelation so far. I really enjoyed watching him pitch. I've talked to friends of mine, writers in other cities, and everybody's impressed with him. Of course, he's got to go a lot around the league a couple times before you're really confident, but he looks like a real find. I'm not so convinced that some of the other guys that they've been trying out here are really going to amount to much. If Smiley can just pitch a league average ERA and either Pfister or Scherzer show, you know, or pitch to their potential, not to their, in Scherzer's case, isn't very erratic. So you have Verlander, either Pfister or Scherzer is a top number two, Porcello or the other Pfister or Scherzer is a mediocre number three, and Smiley, that would be pretty good. Then I would be worrying about the bullpen. And the bullpen, I'm not worried yet, but I'd have to say that I didn't think Valverde could be perfect. Again, the real question is he simply going to save 90% of his games, or is he going to be Mitch Williams? Because so far this year, he has looked a lot like a right-handed version of Mitch Williams.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, the time is 42 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Why don't you stay with us for a little few more minutes, Larry, Gary. So we'll be right back after we take this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
The American public has a growing weight problem. I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday for a look at a new TV series, The Weight of the Nation, plus a stomach virus mystery solved and hiding secret messages inside pictures. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday coming up on Talk of the Nation at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today will be sunny and the high will be 73. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms starting tonight, the low 52. Mostly cloudy for Saturday with a chance of rain and thunderstorms, the high tomorrow 70. Mostly sunny on Sunday, the high 71. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. I want to thank our good friends, Scott Moore, for setting in for me for the last few days, and Ricardo Cooney for setting in for me as well, setting in for me right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're talking baseball with Gary Gillette, and we're going to talk more. If you have any questions about baseball, about the Tigers and how the Tigers are doing, and can the Tigers, I guess in essence, maybe get a winning streak together, because Gary, they're 16-15 right now, and they've had a lot of games where they win one and lose one in the series. They haven't been dominating a team as we thought they would in the early part of the season. It's just pretty, I guess it's frustrating to see them win two and lose two. And what the heck is going on with them in Seattle? I mean, why can't they? The last 2 years, they haven't been able to do anything with Seattle. I seem like the Mariners just have their number.
Yeah, and that's just a fluke. You know, there are teams every year that just obliterate another team, even though they're not that good. And that might happen, in some cases, for 2 or 3 years, and then it flips. You know, I mean, for one stretch of a couple years, the Tigers might just completely obliterate the Twins, or vice versa. And it's more a fluke than anything else. I mean, the Mariners aren't that good of a team. Certainly, in a long series, the Tigers would have their measure. I just don't pay any attention to that. I mean, most of the time, teams' personnel changes so much, it's not really, you know, the Mariners a year from now may not be anywhere near the same in terms of the pitchers they're throwing at the Tigers or whatever. In terms of consistency, I don't know the Tigers are going to be that consistent. I think this is the kind of team with the kind of hitting that they're going to go on binges where they're going to literally beat the hell out of the opposition. And then they're going to have some slumps. I think what would help their consistency a lot is if their starting pitching settles down. If they got consistent starting pitching out of three of their top their starters, then I think they would probably be much more consistent. Right now, you know, we've only seen, one start from Pfister since he's come back, right?
Yep.
And Smiley is an untested rookie. You know, he looks real good, but there are a lot of rookies who look real good. I mean, Armando Galarraga looked real good for a while. Of course, he wasn't a rookie. He was much older. I'm not saying that Smiley and Galarraga are the same, but I'm just saying that a lot of guys look good for one pass around the league, sometimes twice. If the starting pitching is solid and reasonably consistent, I think this team will reel off a couple of big winning streaks. If not, then I think what's going to happen is the Tigers will be beating the brains out of people pretty often, but also losing some lopsided scores. As for the bullpen, I don't know where that's going to settle. But, you know, the bullpen is the easiest place to fix things. Frankly, if Benoit pitches the way he did last year and Valverde struggles, Benoit could close games. It's not, you know. And the Tigers could go out and get a closer in midseason. Or they could, you know, or they could just have Valverde work out his problems in the eighth inning or the seventh inning or something for a couple weeks and then put him back in the closing slot. I'm not really worried about that. The thing about Valverde this year is his stuff looks good. His control hasn't been good. And I can't figure that out. Obviously, he can't either, because if he could, he would change it. So it's not the kind of thing that he may figure out, that he's been gripping the ball slightly differently or he's made a slight change in the motion, and they might find that tomorrow and he might, you know, save 20 straight or 30 straight games.
Okay. Got a caller for you. Let's go to the phones. We've got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm glad that I'm calling now after you brought up Valverde. I'm not a big fan of Papa Grande's histrionics on the mound. To me, that's Harry High School stuff. I can understand he gets excited. It means a lot. He's a closer. But what do you take of that? I mean, to me, if you're going to do that jumping around, you're going to pop the fist, I guess in my mind it's semi-tolerable when you're getting it done. But I don't think Papa Grande would mind or care too much if a guy were to hit a home run off of him and salute him or do some of the stuff. I understand he's a local guy. The local media isn't going to make a big deal out of it. What is your opinion of Valverde and his show that he puts on? I will admit it's genuine. I don't think he's doing it to put on a show, but I don't think it belongs in the big leagues. And what do you think about other major leaguers think about it? Again, you know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, and when you make a big deal out of the times you win, you better be able to take it when you don't. So I just wondered, and I appreciate your opinion on that, because I know you've watched a lot of baseball, you've watched a lot of teams, but I'm not a big fan of Lou Stovall's mind. What do you think?
I'm guessing the caller is an ex-athlete because he has an athlete's viewpoint. You know, the athletes are the ones who get really charged up. Personally, from the writer's viewpoint, doesn't bother me at all. There are a lot of guys who are sort of arrogant SOBs in baseball and in all sports. And if that bothers you, you sort of can't write about them, because these are not, by and large, guys you invite to your house to have dinner. And these are not, by and large, guys you want dating your daughter or your sister. I mean, they're, by and large, very, very, how would I say it, personally aggressive guys, because they are the best at what they do, and they know it, and they've been the star of the team since they were in high school, if not before that. Valverde seems sincere. He doesn't seem to mean anything personal. He's not, you know, trying to show up any individual player. I can see how some batters wouldn't like it. The way batters demonstrate their contempt for a pitcher who shows them up is by hitting a home run. That's basically what they do. If they were to start, you know, yelling at him when they're running around the base after hitting a home run, then they're liable to get brushed back or get hit the next time up. I am not at all a fan of hitting people. This Cole Hamels thing with Bryce Harper was incredibly Bush League, and I'm glad he got suspended. Frankly, I thought he should have been suspended longer. I know that when players are on the field, their adrenaline is running high. We saw earlier in the week Justin Verlander get into it with an umpire in Seattle. Jim Leland was ejected from the game. And I thought it was very, very mature of Verlander, and it shows his maturity that after the game, he said he went to the umpire and talked to him and apologized, because he said in the heat of the moment, you know, things feel different. I think that athletes, by and large, the mature veterans understand that. The immature veterans and the rookies don't. I don't, I don't think anyone, because Valverde is a genuine guy, he's not a guy trying to show up individual people, and because he doesn't mouth off in the press too much, I think people sort of put up with it. And again, if you're really good, people cut you more slack because you can get away with that stuff.
Hey, Gary, what do you think? In a way, this team reminds me of some of the Earl Weaver teams, like the three-run homer philosophy. Does that team remind you of anything of that, the Earl Weaver kind of teams?
Well, again, assuming the Tigers' pitching is better than we've seen so far, it would be two out of three. Earl Weaver's teams are pitching, defense, and three-run homers, right?
Yep.
And so we've got the pitching, I think. We've got the three-run homers for sure. Mm-hmm. The defense, not so much. Although, to be fair, of course, the Orioles teams didn't always have good defense at every position. But Weaver was very concerned about having good defensive catcher. Tigers got that. Avila's a good defensive catcher. He was concerned about having good defense up the middle. Well, Tigers don't really have it at second or short. I mean, Paul Belanger played a lot of years for Earl Weaver, not because he could hit, because his bat was a toothpick.
Right.
And then in center field with Paul Blair and others, at second base, the Orioles tended to have reliable second basemen who were not brilliant defensively, although some of them were pretty good. So the Tigers, you know, that's where they fall down. Of course, not at Austin Jackson. Jackson is a premier center fielder. And so what they're really falling down is at second and short. Now, if Peralta hits like he did last year, his defense is more than acceptable. If he hits the way he's hitting now, not so much. And at second base, you know, despite what they said in spring training about how they had plenty of options, you know, Brandon Inge, Danny Wirth, Ramon Santiago, Ryan Rayburn, I didn't like any of them. If I were in charge, I believe that Danny Wirth has turned the corner, which they said with the bat, that is, I would put Danny Wirth in there every day and say, Danny, we're going to give you 300 at-bats and see what you can do. And if I didn't have faith in Danny Wirth, I'd put Ramon Santiago in there. And no, at least I had a sure-handed glove there with a guy who could run a little bit, bunt a little, and bunt pretty well. And at least I would just, you know, and then see if I could scoop somebody up better in July. So, yeah, I mean, the Tigers, the pitching, if their pitchers get on track, that's a pitching and three-run home run team. It's just the defense at second and short is really lacking.
Okay. Hey, Gary, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and we'll have you back on soon, probably after we get to almost that halfway point, and then we'll really break down the Tigers, even maybe more so than we have today.
Sure, Earl. I'm glad to talk baseball anytime. Good talking to you again.
Okay, good talking to you, Gary. We'll talk to you later.
All right,
yep,
bye.
And that's Gary Gillette talking baseball with him right here on AM 870 WKAR. I want to let you know I'll be on Sundays. Tim Stout will be on. It'll be on Sunday on the Sunday Stout on Sports, 11 o'clock Sunday afternoon on WILX-TV. We'll talk more sports with you. And then, and of course, we're talking sports each and every day. Now, next week, next Tuesday, you want to listen in because we'll give you tell you who's going to be competing in this year's Diamond Classic. We'll do that on Tuesday, and you'll get a chance to know who's going to be competing in this year's Diamond Classic. That'll be coming up on Tuesday. We'll make that announcement right here on AM 870 WKAR. The Diamond Classic is always one of the premier events here in the Mid-Michigan area, baseball events, and it's really good. And so we'll have the field for you coming up on Tuesday right here on AM 870 WKAR. And it's been a pleasure talking to you all each and every day. And also, Jacob, Aaron, we wanted to, we talked a lot of baseball today, you know, found out a lot more about the Tigers. And, you know, after 30 games, I guess you can start to figure out a little bit about them. What more did you find out about the Tigers? What do you think they need to do? Or did you find out enough from Gary today?
Yeah, well, I mean, Gary made a lot of good points today. You know, I don't think it's just one specific area. I think all areas can be improved for the most part. Obviously, the pitching needs to be improved there, more consistency, especially with the bats as well, especially on the defensive end. So I think they got to improve a little bit in each area. I don't think there's one area you're just like, oh, man, if they don't improve that at all, they're in big trouble. But, you know, we're only still 30 games into the season or so. So obviously the Tigers still have a long ways to go. So, you know, I still think they'll come around. I still see them winning the division no problem. So I just think every aspect needs to improve a little bit, and I think that will happen. You know, it's starting to warm up a little bit too. You know, and I think that has a play with it as well. Plus, I just really don't think that the team has really found out who they really are.
Yes.
You know, sure. Obviously, they got a crap load of press coverage, media coverage in the off season and going into the season, and still do today. So, you know, they kind of had this perception that they were this sort of big, they were the team to beat. But
yes.
Frankly, I think now that they realize where they are, they're questioning whether who they are. And once they find out, I think, who they are as a team, I think that's when they'll start coming around. But I agree with Gary where I don't think it's not going to be one of those where they go on like a 10-game winning streak or something like that. Mm-hmm. I still think they're going to, in a series, they might lose one or maybe, you know, lose every other couple game or something like that. So a lot of areas to improve, all of them. But I think they'll be fine, though.
Yep. Got some bad news for people from former Detroit Lions receiver Tommy Boyd. Received 5 years in prison for having sexual contact with a teenage girl. Boyd used to be the coach at Lansing Eastern, coached there, and he went to school here in the Lansing, Mid-Michigan area. He got 5 years in prison for having sexual contact with a teenage girl. The Oakland Press reports that a month after pleading no contest to two charges, including a second degree criminal sexual conduct with the teenager, a 15-year-old girl at a movie theater in Oakland County. He had served, served as the girl's trainer in sports. Boyd already is in prison for inappropriate contact with a girl in Macomb County. He played for the Lions in the late 1990s and later worked as a personal trainer and track coach at Frazier High School. So Tommy Boyd is facing 5 years in prison. The time now, 57 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. And, you know, with baseball season, I don't know if I expected the Tigers to be as good. I know I didn't expect them to be as good as everyone was making them out to be. I just didn't think they would be that good. I thought they'd be okay. Maybe around there, what you've been saying. I thought they'd be okay, but I didn't think they'd be all great, a great team. They looked good on paper, but it just seemed like something was missing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, I knew going in, you know, the media, it gets worse every time. It gets worse every year. A team gets really good, or they make a few good trades, and then everyone just jumps on the bandwagon because it makes good story, makes good press. I mean, it gets worse and worse, and now with, you know, things like social media, just to make it even more worse. So yeah, I guess I'm not surprised by their sort of record right now and where they're at. The team has always had issues in certain areas. I mean, there's so many positions within baseball that have to be filled. But, you know, teams, it's a long season, and teams find out who they are. They play a lot of games. I mean, you know, it's I'm not really surprised. A lot of people are. I get that. I understand that. But when you surround yourself by, you know, things like ESPN and all these other media coverages that say they're the best team in the world, or, you know, in baseball or some case, you know, it's bound to, you're bound to be surprised why they aren't doing good. But I don't do that, so I'm not all that surprised.
Okay. Hey, I want to thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling. We invite you to come back and join us on Monday right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. And if you've been a first-time caller, remember to come back and join us on Monday afternoon at 1:05 right here on WKAR. We want you to have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and come back and join us on Monday right here on WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a safe and pleasant evening, and we'll see you on Monday right here on WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.